and we are the Nonprofits. I'm your host, Dennis Lube, along with Matt Dillahunty.
Hello.
Beth Pretzwood.
Hey.
And a very special guest.
Hello.
We're coming to you live from the Dillahunty International Studios in beautiful Austin, Texas, on the 30th of April, 2011. The music you heard was The Logical Song by Supertramp. And boy, do we have an offer for you. Would you like to be king of the universe with unlimited power to do whatever you want? Of course you would. We all do. And with this limited-time internet offer, that dream can come true. Our sponsor, the Atheist Community of Austin, that nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state, wants to make you a god. That's right, omnipotence can be yours. And did I mention? It's absolutely free. To learn more about this amazing offer, just check the ACA voicemail at 512-371-2911 or visit their website at www.atheist-community.org. Did I say free? That's right. To enter, all you have to do is be tortured for a few hours, be dead for 3 days, and after that, absolute power is yours. Just like how the Nonprofits can return live each Saturday from 2 to 3 o'clock with a new episode, you can return from the dead and surprise your friends and co-workers. Still not sure? Follow the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com to join the chat room and listen to satisfied customers. To learn how you can take advantage of this offer and be the all-powerful life of the party, just sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. There's nothing to lose. And if you act now, we'll knock a day off the time you have to be dead. That's only 2 days in exchange for unlimited power. Operators are standing by.
Results not typical. No warning implied or expressed as otherwise guaranteed.
Well done.
I want to take advantage of that offer.
Of course, we all do.
Do I not get to get identified by name? This has happened to me before on this show.
It's Dennis wrote the intro. Dennis,
yeah,
up on him.
I wrote the
intro.
Yeah.
I'm Jeff D.
It's Jeff D.
Those
that's
people.
Right.
Our special guest today.
I'm not on this show often enough for people to be able to recognize me just from my voice, I don't think.
I think you, yes.
People did in the chat room. They heard that little fragment, and they were like, Jeff D!
Yeah, see? We want to have a big reveal,
revealed on Facebook and stuff.
So. You never forget your first. So, yeah, Jeff D, who started all this mess.
That's right.
Is here
my
today.
Fault that there's a podcast. Yeah.
Is here today, thankfully, because started Russell couldn't make it today, and Jeff is getting screwed tomorrow. He was supposed to be on the TV show, had stuff to talk about, but there's a wedding and a conflict, and so tomorrow's Atheist Experience TV show is just flat-out canceled. I have lots of other news that some of you will think is probably bad news, but it's not all bad, even if it seems bad at first. First of all, there won't be a Nonprofits next week on May 7th. Or the following week on May 14th. Or the following week on May 21st.
No!
Because there's a lot going on, including May 21st is the week that I will be in Oakland, California at the American Atheist-sponsored Rapture Regional Atheist Meetup, where I will be talking about making an impact via the media. The May 28th, we are going to be back. We're going to be doing everything we can. Now, there's a chance that there may be rogue episodes on those weeks that I'm not around, which means I finally need an intern. Someone in the Austin area whose Saturdays are free, who likes to work for no compensation and be treated absolutely abysmally, who has some familiarity with mixer boards, microphones, Audacity, Winamp streaming. Feel free to submit your application along with a check for $0. And I'll go through them and see who we can find. I know there were several people who offered previously, and I apologize that we didn't get around to it. But now it looks like there's so many conflicts that it's time. Because I got back from the American Atheist National Convention, which I had a blast at, and I will discuss a little bit later on. But I was sitting in the airport on the way back when my boss called to tell me that they're shutting down the Austin office and we're all going to lose our jobs. So
oh, no.
I'm going to be busy with a lot of things, one of which, of course, is looking for a new job. But this comes along with, you know, a wedding and looking for a house. And I'm it's dog pile on Matt month. And
right.
So I'll get it sorted. But one of the things I'm looking to do is actually to finally get a no, I can't even say that because if I say it out loud, it doesn't happen. I'll just get beat up again. So we'll skip that. So, how's everybody been? How you been in the 2 weeks since we did the show, Dennis?
Pretty good.
And Jeff, it's been, what, at least 9, 10 months at least since you were...
Since I've done a show? Yeah. No. Really? Could be.
I think so.
I don't know.
We'll have to go back and look. Okay.
Okay. And that's how long...
And nobody heard you because you don't have a microphone. You're like the fifth Beatle knitting away in the corner.
Is that my fault? For volunteering?
No, no, no.
Beth doesn't have a mic?
She gets mine.
Okay.
You have Russell's mic. So
I've been fine.
I've decided that before we get to news or even American Atheist discussions, since Jeff's the one that's getting screwed tomorrow and Jeff's the guest today, you get to take up as much time to talk about what you brought in as
awesome.
Possible, because I think
so
it's cool.
I can jump right into it. All right, so hands up, everybody that saw this Time magazine with the cover story, What If There's No Hell? And this is radio, so
yeah.
Count the hands. No hands went
the
up.
The play-by-play, yeah, no hands went up.
So there was this Time magazine article with the cover story, What If There's No Hell? And I, of course, I had to buy it because I have an issue with hell.
Yeah, on the face of it, you're going, what if there's no hell? Hey, two thumbs up. All
and now
right.
You've got a printed issue with hell.
I don't much care for being threatened, and so hell has been an issue for me. And those of the that have followed the YouTube videos, I'm sure know this. So I wanted to know what's the deal, and obviously it's a stupid question. Because, like,
right.
Duh. It's like, what if there's no Santa Claus?
Well, from our point of view, yes.
But,
well, it's a strange question. Because not, you know, is there a hell? It's, is hell dead? Is what he asked at the top of that.
Right. And they made a big deal about how almost some round number of years ago, they had the Is God Dead episode
right.
of Time magazine. So they're right. making a connection there. So I bought the magazine and I read the article and found out there's this evangelical pastor, Rob Bell, who has come out with a book called Love Wins. And apparently in that book, he says some stuff that the evangelical community is all up in arms about, part of which is the idea that either there isn't a hell or it's temporary or something. And this is where reading the article was incredibly frustrating because I couldn't tell. I just could not find a section where it said specifically this is what he's saying.
Right.
I will read you a couple of snippets.
There's not like a summary at the end that says this is what I actually believe about.
No,
wow.
There's not.
How annoying.
Not only that. I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but then I went to our friend YouTube and looked at interviews with this guy, and I couldn't find any examples of him explaining himself in those YouTube interviews either.
This is that sophisticated theology we hear about.
In fact, I thought the guy was chock full of more psychobabble and more evasions and refusals to address direct questions than I am used to seeing, even from ministers. But anyway, I'll read some bits of this article to you that will give a little context, because I did eventually find out what the hell was going on. The standard Christian view of salvation through the death and resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth, this is Time magazine talking now. Time magazine is preaching at us.
Right.
Is summed up in the Gospel of John, which promises eternal life to whomsoever believeth in him. Traditionally, the key is the acknowledgement that Jesus is the Son of God, who, in the words of the ancient creed, for us and for our salvation came down from heaven and was made man. In the evangelical ethos, one either accepts this and goes to heaven or refuses and goes to hell. Rob Bell, a tall 40-year-old son of a Michigan federal judge, begs to differ. He suggests that the redemptive work of Jesus may be universal, meaning that, as his book's subtitle puts it, every person who ever lived could have a place in heaven.
Aww.
That would be the there's no hell part, right?
Right.
Still, I don't find that terribly informative.
But it's all puppies and flowers now.
And so the evangelical community is up in arms about this because, you know, like the article said, the basic notion is you got to be a Christian because if you're not, you're going to be tortured forever. And the guy comes along and says, no, you won't be tortured forever even if you're not a Christian. It's like knocks the legs out of the scam, right?
Yeah, but at least the threat's gone, right?
That, you'd think... This is leading in a direction of me being able to say, finally, for the first time ever, okay, great, I don't mind what Christians say about this anymore.
Right, right.
We'll see. So the question is Bell's Christianity less judgmental, more fluid, open to questioning the most ancient of assumptions, on an inexorable rise? Quote, I have long wondered if there is a massive shift coming in what it means to be a Christian, Bell says. Something new is in the air. And that's what I wanted to know. I wanted to know, what is this new thing? Apart from the hell bit, which I get, yeah?
If we're all going to go to heaven anyway, why should we be Christians?
That's why the evangelicals' leadership are freaking out, right?
Yeah,
they're saying that, yeah, he's given away the... he's given away the stick. He's still got the carrot, right? But actually, he's given away the carrot and thrown away the stick.
Right.
You'd think. But no, he says he's not.
Oh, okay.
I'm wondering, what the hell is this all about? Well, I read the article. I couldn't figure out what exactly his deal was. I watched YouTube videos. Couldn't figure out what his deal was. Finally, in an MSNBC interview, interviewer Martin Bashir began the interview by quoting from or paraphrasing from Bell's own book. And this is the revealing part. Ultimately, all people will be saved, even those who've rejected the claims of Christianity. Bell argues people will eventually be persuaded by God's love post-mortem in the life to come. And then I go, okay, I get it now. You know, remember that story about rabbis in Israel circumcising the dead because they didn't want to bury uncircumcised people in their cemetery?
Uh-huh.
And remember the stories about the Mormons who are praying people into heaven?
Yep.
And you know, every time you've ever heard a made-up story of a deathbed conversion by an atheist or rationalist or scientist... This is the same fucking thing.
Yep.
This guy is just claiming, all of us here and all of you listening to the show who consider yourselves atheists, this guy is saying, yeah, you say that now, but once you're dead, I'm going to be completely free to say that you have come over to our side and I'm claiming your rotting corpse for Jesus. That is this guy's message. That's where he's going. And his, you know, it leaves open the question, well, then why should you be a Christian now? And, you know, he's, I would think that he would say something to the effect of, you know, well, why wait?
Yeah.
Right?
And also,
go ahead and join the club now, because we're going to get you anyway in the end.
And his ideas aren't...
In both manners of speaking.
And I just want to say, I don't like hell, because I don't much care for being threatened. But I don't like this either, because I don't much care for being lied about.
Uh-huh.
As far as I'm concerned, this guy's invisible friend can go unlock the doors of hell again. I am never changing my mind. If there is an afterlife, unless everything that is said about Christianity now is like a big fat lie, and it's really completely different from what the message is now, I'm not joining up. I'm not joining up now, and I'm not joining up in the afterlife.
Well, they've managed,
if there were one.
They've managed to come up with something lamer than a deathbed confession. Now it's a post-mortem.
Oh, yeah. You can still be an atheist. You can still be an atheist on your deathbed. And this guy doesn't care. This guy's going to say, hey, you know, just a matter of time. Sometime in the afterlife, God's love is so wonderful that you're going to come around.
His ideas aren't in any way new, though.
Why? Isn't that convenient?
There were a number of doctrines that were eventually deemed heretical during the first couple centuries of Christianity regarding everything. And that specifically, there's been, you know, the Catholic Church has purgatory and used to have limbo. Mm-hmm. And there was the idea of, is hell eternal? And so there was, you know, or what is hell? And so there are some, like Billy Graham, who consider hell to not be a literal place of torture, but instead separation from God.
Right.
There are others who adopt annihilation theory, which is those who will be saved will continue on with the good afterlife. Anybody who's not saved will simply cease to exist, and this can metaphorically be considered hell. There are others who consider hell to be a temporary state where you are punished for your wickedness until you've essentially paid for your sins, and then you get to go on to either the actual heaven or some diminished version of it. And then there's still others who say that it's a temporary thing of where you get a second chance. Well, okay, first of all, if I've died and I'm somehow still conscious and aware and I am experiencing torture, I'm pretty sure that second chance isn't going to take very long before I succumb to seeking some alternative, you know, it just as a matter of mere preference. But what he's also doing, and he's admitted it, I found a quote from him that says, this is not just the same old message with new methods. We are rediscovering Christianity as an Eastern religion, as a way of life. And when I gave the hell lecture, I talked about how certain forms of Buddhism have the rough equivalent of a hell. I think it's Narada or Narato. I won't get it right now.
Klaatu.
Yeah.
Barada.
No.
Spot on.
Where you are essentially gone to, you know, work through your karma. And so it can be very bad, or it can be, you know, it's often listed as cold and all these other things. So this is a guy who's found the traditional Orthodox message of Christianity rather distasteful. Who has read through the Bible and read into it exactly what he wants, and found ideas in other religions and in ancient views of Christianity that he finds particularly appealing, and is using that as a way of marketing himself as something different.
Right.
Sure.
And, oh, he's a presuppositionalist as well. Because the other quote from him that's on Wikipedia is, I affirm the truth anywhere in any religious system, in any worldview. If it's true, it belongs to God. So basically, whatever is true. And since God is truth, whatever is true is God. And so if your religion has within it a truth, then it is necessarily of God. It is. I know why evangelicals are up in arm. This guy is as divorced from Orthodox Christianity and unbiblical as possible.
That's more extreme than anything I was able to find.
So, well, right there, Wikipedia. Right.
But the you know, I don't care about any of that. I mean, I'm not interested in any of those other religions either.
Well, I don't think he personally.
All he was doing was blurring the edges of Christianity and bringing on board things from other stupid religions. You know, that would be no more or less stupid or offensive than anything else. But here he is apparently trying to make Christianity more palatable. Mm-hmm. Even more palatable to folks like us. He just doesn't know how.
He does not understand.
And, you know, I think it's ironic that there's this big article in Time magazine about him and his argument with the other evangelicals. No thought given to, you know, asking the opinions of non-believers about the implications of this guy's new spin or old revived spin. You know, does it not matter? Does it not matter? Or is this just a big argument going on amongst evangelicals about, you know, which of them get to paw over our moldering corpses?
Yeah, and I don't think for a second, though, that he's wanting to run around claiming specific individuals have had post-mortem conversions in order
he's
to bolster
not,
him.
He's saying that about about specific individuals.
Yeah, it's everybody.
He's making a blanket statement.
Yeah.
And I don't care. As a specific individual.
Yes.
I'm affected by that blanket
Everybody
statement.
Everybody gets their corpse raped. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, excuse me. You don't get to say what I'm going to believe after I'm dead.
It's kind of a... From where I said, it's kind of a... We're still talking about things of which he can have no knowledge. So his assertions are as absurd as anybody else's.
Sure.
So I'm wondering, you know, I mean, obviously there's a reason why you don't see pastors running around saying, nope, you know, you're all doomed and you will be dumped in vats of warm marmalade after you're dead. Your soul, you know, has some, you know, just making up the most... Stuff that's unappealing and absurd.
Right.
What you see is them increasingly making up things that are appealing despite their absurdity. Yeah. The idea that, you know what, I might have screwed up down here, but eventually it's all going to work out.
I am always, you know, in a different sense, I'm always encouraged to see desperate flailing attempts like this to modify Christianity to make it more palatable, because that means
they're losing.
That means they're losing. We're having an effect, right? They are realizing that their product is not going over so well, and this is how Christianity got as domesticated as it is now, and that can continue. That's a good thing. I'd like to see it go away completely, but at least, you know, that's a little bit of forward progress.
Yeah, they seem to be pulling their own teeth. So, good.
Yeah, I haven't actually been reading the chat room, but I looked over real quick and saw that somebody typed in the every knee shall bow.
Yeah.
Yes, which all this guy has done is said it's not just your physical knees, but your spooky ghost knees that you'll have after your dead.
Knees will bow.
Curiously, though, he seems to have overlooked the other verses that contradict this. Like, not everybody who calls me Lord, Lord will share
that,
in this.
And that's the kind of, you know, refusal to answer direct questions, dishonesty that I sensed in this guy when I listened to interviews with him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's worse than most.
Yeah.
And it just seems sticking to his own point and not caring what anybody else has to say.
I'm pretty sure that, like, first year seminary students would be able to just destroy this. I mean, because just sitting here, somebody says, you know, every knee shall bow. Yes. That's somebody attesting to the truth of the claim. That's different from whether or not everybody's going to worship. If, in fact, there is an afterlife and this Christian God exists, and I experience this, well, I'm not going to continue being an atheist, but that doesn't mean he's any less of a prick.
Right.
And it doesn't mean I'm necessarily going to worship. And if I do so, sure, it would be to avoid the, you know, hey, I'm going to torture you forever type thing.
Yeah. Belief does not equal worship.
Yeah, given the choice between the heavenly servility and being a puppet to his will versus annihilation, I think I'm probably opt for annihilation just to remain a shred of my integrity as I then cease to exist.
I believe in Ebola. I don't worship it.
Yeah. not impressive.
So there you go. That's all I had.
Yeah, and then, you know, but I think any first-year seminary student would point out that, you know, the verses like, not everybody who calls me Lord, Lord, and depart from me for I never knew you, and all these other things that, you know, Jesus said about, this isn't for everybody. And I don't know how he gets around those other than to say, well, that part of the Bible's wrong. Great. I love that. I'm with Jeff on that. Not only is he scrambling, but he's put himself in a position where he's got to say, you know, that part of the Bible's wrong. Okay, well, then how do you know the parts that you're appealing to are right? I'm in a position where, as far as I can tell, no reason to think any of it's
in
right.
In interviews, he says, you know, I start from the position that God is love.
Yes.
You know, and then from there, that's his standard by which he chooses whether each verse is accurate or not accurate.
We're back to the God that agrees with him.
Right.
I'm going to define God as love as I understand love, and therefore I can go through and make my determinations about what a truly loving being would do based on my definitions of love. And now God is exactly what I've defined him to be.
It's the old spag, self-projection as God.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if I change my mind, well, clearly God has corrected me, because now my new opinions directly map to what God is.
Yeah.
So there's been an email coming in specifically requesting not only that Dennis participate more in reading of news and commentary. I have all of them up here, but also that... there were people who were like, we want to hear more of Beth. And I think it's because some people were actually, like, you know, enjoying the accent, which that's my accent to enjoy.
I got an article in Time magazine about the new HBO series Game of Thrones. Dennis could read that. It's got gods
it's
in it.
Hardly applicable.
I have not been watching. I think I'm going to probably wait for a DVD and some reviews of whether or not it's worth
Episode
my time.
Episode 1 was quite good. Have you read the books?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I think it helps you.
I've played the board game, but I don't think that counts.
All right.
All right. So Beth has what is probably one of my favorite stories of the week.
Well, the title is certainly interesting.
Okay. So there's this preacher, Paseka Motsoeneng. This is in Africa. I'm not sure which country. Friendly Atheist covered this. So he does healing services, and his method of healing is a little unorthodox. So I will just read this straight through.
Complimentary treatment, perhaps?
Sitting on the lap of a female congregate, Motsoeneng placed his hand on the head of a 17-year-old teen who cannot be identified due to her age and started praying for her. As she was praying for her, she collapsed. Motsoeneng then told the teenager, who was lying on her back, to open her legs, which she did. He then plunged his fingers into her private parts and started moving his fingers inside her vagina. As he was busy with his healing process...
I'm sorry.
Can
we comment as this goes? This started out with him sitting on the lap of a female congregant?
Yes.
What is he, like a ventriloquist dummy?
It gets worse.
Oh, my God.
So he's sitting on the lap of one woman fingering a 17-year-old girl. As he was busy with his healing process, Motsoeneng ordered her to call him by his nickname, Mboro. Say Mboro, he ordered her. Mboro, she said with a stifled cry. He was interrupted by a female congregant who brought him a glassful of what looked like ice cream, which she spoon-fed him. He was still sitting on the other woman's lap.
How do you sit on one woman's lap and manually manipulate the genitals of another woman on the floor?
And be spoon-fed ice cream by another one.
It's acrobatic.
Well,
that's
he has skills.
I feel like I'm reading some sort of story, some sort of porno story.
Yeah, it does. It reads like that.
There's no pictures.
There's pictures of him, and he is not an attractive man. I will say, but yes, it just goes on. He was supposedly healing these women. There was another woman who was having trouble enjoying sex with her husband, and he apparently thought shoving his hand up there would help with that. Yes. I don't even... He calls it a biscuit. I want to ask all men in here to stop eating biscuit. Do you hear me? You must not eat biscuit anymore.
Even with gravy?
Wow.
I have to say that as absurd as this is and as clearly wrong as it is, it's kind of hot. Call me Mboro. Show me your biscuit.
Bring me ice cream.
Yes. Feed me ice cream and make me king of the world because I am a sexist moron who abuses women.
Oh, man.
How do I complete the... If all you have is fingers, every problem looks like...
A biscuit.
A biscuit.
Man.
Okay, he's talked some people into some stuff, apparently.
It's, you know...
And where did you run into this story?
It was on Friendly Atheist.
Wow.
Okay.
But there was a link to another news article that you were actually reading from that had more information. Yeah, it's...
Pretty amazing.
You know, there's that website out there, you know, What's the Harm? And because a lot of people are like, well, what's the harm with all this? Well, the fact is that this guy, yes, okay, we're talking about somebody in another country. I will have to say that in all of my experience, there is nothing that I can find in the Bible or in Orthodox Christianity that would remotely support his actions. However, these people are being supported by Christian ministries here in the United States.
Right.
So send your daughters.
Yeah. So Beth has to call me Mboro from now on.
Well, we're going to need some ice cream in here.
Yeah. Holy crap. So one of the things that happened that we talked about previously here in the greater Austin area was there was a bus driver for Capital Area Rural Transport that refused to drive. There were two women who wanted to go to the Planned Parenthood clinic last year, and he was fired over it.
For refusing to take them.
For refusing to take them.
Wow.
His concern was that he might be transporting somebody there to undergo an abortion. So he had no idea what they were even going there for.
Right.
It was just the sheer possibility that he might be driving somebody to get an abortion put him in a position where he absolutely refused to do his job, and he was, of course, rightly fired.
Right.
Now, granted, I think, you know, you do a reprimand and you do some discussion and everything else, but if he's adamant that he's going to continue doing this, then you are refusing to do your job as it's described, and you are fired. He filed a lawsuit, and it was settled. He got $21,000 because the board members agreed that a settlement of $21,000 was less than what they would have had to pay in legal fees.
Just to make it
right.
go away.
Just
right.
to make this, you know.
Yeah.
Go away.
On the one hand, I'd like to see an actual legal precedent because this is just nuts. And I'd rather not live in a society where anybody who does something like this can get, you know, $20,000 as a settlement. On the other hand, I'm glad he's not a bus driver, and I'm glad we didn't spend $1 million defending this
right.
when we're in a, you know, potential financial crisis that is affecting teachers, among other things. And also, the other bit of news that I mentioned that people are going to look at as potentially bad is that we got a notice from the Public Access Studio in Austin that they are not going to be renewing producers' licenses after September 1st. This is something we don't know for sure what's happening. It's possible that they're closing the Public Access Studio. It's possible that it's just going to go through some change and be taken over by somebody else. We still don't know. But this is something that we've expected for quite some time. So if, in fact, and I find it just sad that they spent $1 million renovating this and not getting it completely right, only to close it shortly thereafter. Yeah. But if, in fact, the studio closes, we already have plans in place to return to doing the show guerrilla style like we did, you know, here before, sitting right there. And we'll do everything we can to make that happen. The ACA is also in the process of actively looking for a building where we can then house the nonprofit stuff and the Atheist Experience stuff on a regular basis.
Cool.
There's a lot of things in the works, but it may be the case that after October, the Atheist Experience no longer has the Public Access Studio to use. We don't know. So.
End of an era.
Yep.
Very, very likely some changes, which one of the things is that I've talked about is that when we did the show Guerrilla Style, it was almost entirely atheist callers. Because you're no longer on public access TV.
Right, right.
And now you're using, you know, I'm not giving out my home phone number, so you're primarily using Skype. Right. I don't know that that's going to be as much of a problem as we do get theistic callers from outside of Austin now at a fairly regular basis. And one of the things that we'll do is work to have theistic guests on more like we did with Ray. You know, there's a potential of having some discussions with possibly some of the pastors from the Stone Church or anything like that.
Stone Church.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
I ended up going to lunch on Thursday with one of the associate pastors, one of the teaching pastors from Stone Church. As coincidence would have it, Beth and I are planning to go to Stone Church on the 15th, which is a Sunday. He's doing the sermon that day, so it'll be interesting. We had a great lunch. We talked about the fact that this Mark individual who's called in a number of times, I have no idea if he's legit or not, but there are, you know, he had his epiphany in the after show discussion a couple weeks ago that it was okay to think for himself, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it seems like he had an epiphany, but then 2 seconds later he's inviting you to go to his church.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, and I have my concerns about whether or not he's legit at all. But in any case, it prompted some interesting discussions. And we said before, when we knew we were being prank called by some people but couldn't always identify who it was, that it didn't matter to me when I was on whether the call was a prank or not, as long as it promoted an actual legitimate discussion and wasn't
right.
just a caricature of somebody's beliefs.
Sure.
So, for better or worse, that's the way things turned out. I had a great lunch with him. We talked quite a bit. He asked a bunch of questions about, you know, atheism and my position and everything else. We even talked about free will, and we talked about the fact that the church is primarily a Calvinist, 5 points full on, you know, God created the universe to maximize his glory, and it's deterministic, and everything was dictated by God, right? You know, the fact that I'm an atheist was dictated by God. And so we didn't quite work out all of our differences in any case, but we had, you know, an enjoyable discussion on a number of topics.
Right.
I still have no idea if, in fact, there were kids in the church who were fans of the show or if anybody objected. I'm thinking what may have happened is that if Mark is legit, there may have been a couple of kids who watched the show whose parents may have objected, but that this isn't the position of the church in any way. Because as it turns out, the pastor that I had lunch with watches the show regularly and was a fan of the show before he took his teaching position at the church. And he has a friend who he had gone to school with who's an atheist, and he recommended our show to his atheist friend.
Mm-hmm.
So they do not have the animosity towards us that had been portrayed at other calls, or
right,
at least this
right.
individual doesn't. Now, there may be people out there in the pew.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing is, you know, we talk about the claims that there's some sophisticated theology out there that's not being addressed,
right.
which is complete nonsense. But the thing is, a lot of the pastors are, I would say, more sophisticated in their understanding of this than the average person sitting in the pew. And in many cases, the persons in the pew, in much the same way that people hear what they want to hear or read what they want to read when they're reading the Bible, they hear what they want to hear while they're sitting in the pew. So when the pastor says something they like, it reaffirms what they already believe. And when the pastor says something they don't like or don't understand, it has no impact.
Right.
So, you know, you're taking from it exactly what you want. But
well, there's that. And then there's, you know, the common practice of simply not saying certain things from the pulpit that they
right.
think their flock is not going to want to, not going to be able to deal with.
Yeah. So in keeping with the tradition of relying on Hemet Mehta's Friendly Atheist blog to supply us with tons and tons of news things to talk about, this one was also posted there. We're hopefully all aware, I didn't get to watch last week's show, so I don't know for sure if Jen and Martin talked about this, but Governor Rick Perry has called for Texans to pray for rain.
Oh, yeah, right, for rain.
Which I am now calling for people to ask him to resign. Because while he's entitled to his religious beliefs and entitled to talk about them, he's not allowed to do so in his official capacity as governor.
Right.
That's where the line needs to be drawn in a proper right. secular government. And when the governor of a state calls for all of his citizens to go out and pray for rain, it's we need to point out that this is just as absurd as if he'd called for everybody to sacrifice a goat or do a rain dance, and it is all inappropriate because he, in his official capacity, is endorsing a particular religious view. Matter of fact, the fact
right.
that he called for prayer instead of rain dances and
mm-hmm.
sacrificing animals
That's
demonstrates
already.
That he's advocating a particular religious
yep.
view.
Yeah.
If he'd have said, you know, we really need some rain, so those of you who do pray, those
Has
of you who sacrifice
anyone,
goats.
Like in the media, it. Even raised this issue with him so that we would have a response from him to that challenge?
Not that I'm aware of. I know the Texas Freedom Network had mentioned it, but I don't know that anybody's directly challenged him on it. He's like,
right.
you know, and he's not alone. Because in Florida, Mayor Sonny Nobles
yeah.
of Live Oak.
Oh, yeah, they're all on this bandwagon.
On his Easter proclamation, said, the main point is that if people around the world truly had God in their lives, there would not be any of the things that atheists point to in order to discredit a belief in the Almighty. God is caring and loving. He's not a mean God. If people were to turn toward God and not away from him, there would be heaven on earth. God bless us all.
Sir, you're one yeah. of the people we point at.
He's right in the sense that there might not need to have been a crusades because there wouldn't have been any
And heathens
any
to
Muslims.
Kill.
And the heathens. Yeah, right. There may not have been the witch hunts, because there wouldn't have been any witches. Everybody would have been Christians.
Right.
A lot of times when you hear this message from religious speakers, you know, saying if everybody was Christian, then there wouldn't be any of these conflicts. It's because they're the ones starting the conflicts, because they can't stand the coexistence of people with different viewpoints.
Yeah, tell the Catholics and the Protestants. Yeah,
yeah.
That's right. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Christians
wouldn't fight each other. No.
We've had portions of the world where, for all intents and purposes, everybody in a particular area was a Christian, and they fought all the time because they disagreed on how to be Christian.
Right.
Hey, I say we get Governor Perry and Mayor Noble and Rob Bell all in a room and let them duke it out about what their ideas are on heaven and hell. And there's another asshat.
We can get that sophisticated theology, yeah.
There's another asshat that we can throw in the ring, because we've thrown him in the ring many, many times before. And I wish Jeff could see that. I can't
is
move this laptop.
Is this like Christian nitwit death match? Is that what we're having?
Well, this is Pat Robertson.
Okay.
Oh, no. What's he said now?
I just wish that
if only
this was over.
Here.
Yeah. So Pat Robertson on the 700 Club is having a conversation with Terry Musin, the co-host.
And I'd read my part of the exchange if I could see your screen there. Oh,
I
hello,
can't move it
boys
far
and girls. I've just been I was praying in my study, and God just whisked me through time and space to be here with you now. On account of you mentioned my name.
So Musin says there's a lot of government-funded...
Well, it was called teleportation.
Musin said there's a lot of government-funded agencies in this country. Why do you think the president picked that one above all else, not to say not one penny? And it was...
You can just go ahead and read my part there.
Sure. And Robertson says, well, it's the left. It's the culture of death.
It is. It's the left hand of darkness.
The far left is livid about killing babies. They want to kill. They want to kill. Do this. They want to destroy.
They delight in the squeals of the dying infants and bathe it in their blood.
Yeah. You go back.
Only the far left, though. I just want to be clear that the semi left is they just want the fornicating and the gay sex and what all like that.
Well, you go back, and I don't want to play all this psychological stuff, but nevertheless, if a woman is a lesbian, what advantage does she have over a married woman, or what deficiency does she have? Well, she can't have children.
Wow, is that how you measure guys?
That's,
what advantage?
That's exactly right. And so if these married women don't have children, if they abort their babies, then that kind of puts them on a level playing field. And you say, nobody's there to express that. Isn't that shocking? Well, think about it a little bit, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. You think about that.
Yep. I got to catch up to them lesbians now.
Right.
Wait a minute. Didn't William Craig Lane say that
Lane Craig.
Killing children
William,
is okay?
You're
as long
referring
as God
to my
says
good
it's okay?
friend, William Lane Craig. Craig Lane. You heathen.
Well, I know there's a link to that on Farangula. So.
Yeah,
it's ironic, you see, that the far left is so intent on killing the babies, while at the same time they're intent on turning all women's into lesbians, so that there'll be no more babies for them to kill. Don't they understand? Their philosophy carries the seed of its own destruction.
So yeah,
but in the meanwhile, of course, you know, good folk like me and William Craig Lane, why we
Lane Craig,
Lane
Craig, as I said, we're just worried about the fate of those poor babies that are getting slaughtered by the fanatical.
But they'll go straight to heaven.
Of the far left.
They'll go straight to heaven.
No, they won't. They've not been baptized.
Well, that's what that
those
Lane Craig guy
crane,
says.
Crane leg.
That leg crane guy says that they'll go straight to heaven. So we should just kill babies.
William Lane Craig's comments.
No, you don't understand. The souls of infants go to heaven if they're killed by God or in his name. If they're killed by a lesbian.
Yeah.
Or a woman who wants to be on equal footing with a lady.
They're cute little souls with their button noses go to the lesbian heaven.
Yeah, so
and I just would ask you to take a moment to contemplate what kind of a horrific place that would be.
So yeah, while Pat Robertson is still off the deep end, and basically saying that women want to abort as many babies as possible so that they can be on even footing with lesbians. Wheeling Craig has gone once again to defending the immorality that people challenge within the Bible.
Uh-huh.
He said, moreover, if we believe, as I do, that God's grace is extended to those who die in infancy or as small children, as Pat Robertson was just pointing out, the death of these children was actually their salvation. This is about God ordering the deaths of people in the Bible.
It's a wonderful thing.
We're so wedded to an earthly naturalistic perspective that we forget that those who die are happy.
We're so wedded to sanity.
Yeah.
How dare we?
We forget that those who die are happy to quit this earth.
For
heaven's incomparable joy. Therefore, God does these children no wrong by taking their lives.
If only your mother could have made you happy when she had you, you Lane Craig shithead.
Well, now, if them children was not being raised by lesbians, looking around and seeing all that evil, they might have been happy on this world, but they cannot be because of the influence of Satan.
So, as bad as that is, basically, you've got these passages in the Bible where God orders the slaughter of people wholesale, including children.
Genocide
and Craig says,
infanticide. It's great.
And Craig says, you know, this is really actually, you know, a good thing because they're all happy to have died to go on to be with God. It gets worse.
Oh, yeah?
Because not only has he spun this terrible thing as a good thing, but he goes on to point out how wrong we are to object to it. So, who does God wrong in commanding the destruction of the Canaanites?
Well, not the Canaanites, obviously.
No.
This part here is beautiful. No? This is a beautiful thing. This is a beautiful sentiment from my friend William Lane Craig.
Not the Canaanite adults, for they were corrupt and deserving of judgment.
That's right.
All right.
Praise the Lord.
Not the children, for they inherit eternal life. So, who is wronged? Ironically, I think the most difficult part of this whole debate is the apparent wrong done to the Israeli soldiers themselves. Can you imagine what it would be like? Can you imagine what it would be like to have to break into a house and kill a terrified woman and her children? The brutalizing effect on these Israeli soldiers is disturbing.
Now, I have to say, I do not care for Mr. Craig's insinuation there that our Lord God in heaven has done anything wrong at all. So clearly, it's perfectly all right to brutalize Israeli soldiers.
They learn something valuable from this, and it makes them stronger in their conviction
really
for
amazing.
God.
They learn obedience, which is the most important thing. Yeah. I'm going to pray now that Jesus will teleport me back to my study. I've had just about enough of you heathens. Plus, I believe Jeff would like to get a word in edgewise in his own voice. So here I go. Whee! Okay, he's gone. Whee!
Good.
Actually, it wasn't... He was wrong. It's not teleportation that was going on. I was channeling.
Channel,
which of course he wouldn't ever want to be part of.
Because clearly, I was still looking at Jeff D, and so
were you?
Yeah, I didn't.
It's funny
see
when
the
he
visage
takes over me, takes me over like that. I just feel like I'm sitting at a distance, watching my own body saying these words.
But the children are happy to die.
When you're at that distance,
so
there's
hard
a
on the soldiers.
Next time there's a card up on top of the bookshelf that has a number on it.
Uh-huh.
Can you take a peek at that and tell me what it is while you're up there?
12.
Yeah, nope. nice try. All right. So, there's technically like 11 minutes in the show. Let me talk a little bit about the American Atheist Convention that I went to.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have stuff to pass on to you two in particular, along with the others. I had a blast. I left Thursday, flew to Memphis late because my flight was delayed. Thought I was not going to get to Des Moines on time. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that the flight that I flew to Memphis on was the same flight that was going to Des Moines. So after getting off and panicking and running around like my hair was on fire, it turned out...
Matt?
Yeah.
You haven't really got any.
I didn't mean that hair.
All right, go
ow!
On.
Yeah.
See? I was really panicked.
That's right.
I realized, okay, cool. I'm getting right back on the same plane I just got off of. And so I looked around, and because I'm wondering, hey, this plane's going to Des Moines. I wonder if anybody else here is for the convention.
Right.
So I'm just standing there texting Beth, and I hear little bits of conversation from a group of people over here. And I was like, oh, yeah, they're going to the convention. Uh-huh. Well, it was Blair Scott and Brian and George and several other people who had come in from different areas. And we ended up all sitting together on the plane from Memphis to Des Moines. So we got a lot of conversation
awesome.
In. Blair Scott being, of course, the communications director for American Atheists now and formerly the Texas State Director for Alabama. Hmm.
I watched a fun little YouTube video of some crazed preacher outside an atheist convention. Do you happen to know if this is... Of course, without being able to tell you,
I don't know what video you watched. Yeah,
but I think it was the American Atheist Convention, and of course, the atheists immediately descended on him like pod people. And
yeah, it may well have been. There.
But he was saying utterly standard, you know, boilerplate, crazy shit about atheists.
It may have been from this. I don't know because there were protesters out front.
Yeah.
I didn't engage with him other than to break up a fight before it started, which was kind of interesting. But Thursday night was great. We had the fundraising dinner that took place before the actual convention started. And I finally got to be in the same room with PZ Myers. So we got to talk a little bit. And finally in the same room with Greta Christina. And so we got to talk for like a half a second, but we talked more later on in the weekend. But all of the speakers... whose names I won't all remember, were there. And then we posed for pictures, and this was part of their fundraising thing. The rest of the convention, for me, was surreal. There were some great things announced. The Reason Rally that's coming up in 2012, which is a little bit like a respin on the Godless Americans March on Washington, except...
Which was a hoot.
Except that this is not just American Atheist. This is 13 atheist and secular organizations working together, despite the differences that drove some of them apart, to actually get as many secular people to Washington for this rally as possible. There's not a date set. I think it's reasonrally.org or possibly .com, but it's easy to find, is where you go to find more information as it's updated. But Dave announced this at the convention. The reason it was so surreal for me, Beth and I have been to these things before. Now, at the Texas Freethought Convention, I'd never been to an American Atheist one, but the Texas Freethought Convention, of course, you know, is getting bigger every year, and I'm friends with a lot of the people who go, so it's no surprise to, and I get to interact with people who already know me and some people from the Texas area who are familiar with the shows, and it's fun. When we went to TAM, of course, that's a skeptics conference and not necessarily an atheist conference. So Beth was going in with the expectation that, well, you know, you're quote-unquote famous and everybody's going to know who you are. And so it was, you know, maybe 50, 60 people out of the 1,000 actually came up and said something. Mm-hmm. American Atheist Convention was a nonstop stream of people coming up, wanting a picture, wanting me to sign something, talking about how thankful they are for the show that we've done and how... I was a theist until I saw your guys' show. I was an agnostic until I saw your guys' show. I was an atheist who didn't care about any of this stuff until I saw your guys' show. And now I'm an atheist activist. And it was, you know, I loved Tracy's dice analogy. What's Jeff D like? It's so funny when somebody threatens him with hell.
I'm a lot like Pat Robertson, apparently.
You know, I haven't seen, I only listen to the podcast, so I don't know what any of you guys look like, but Dennis has a sexy voice.
Oh, no.
And, you know, oh, and I love it when Russell's on there because, you know, his analogies and you when you and Jen work together, it's this, and when Dodd's on there. And so everybody got mentioned, and everybody it was overwhelming because there were people, I'm just some asshole in Texas, and you guys all know me. Smack me around and
we're all a bunch of assholes in
Texas. But there were people I was very moved on a number of occasions because there were people who came up to who were clearly emotional about all this because there's a significant portion of the population that feels alone,
right?
That doesn't have the support network that we are all lucky to have. That doesn't they don't necessarily all have the confidence in their new positions to do the things that we do.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't be happy if I didn't have all of my atheist friends to interact with, but I would at least not be miserable because I'm confident in who I am and I have ways of, you know, expressing it and dealing with things. There are people who are not in that position. There are people who cannot come out to their family and friends. There are people who can't come out for fear of losing their job. There are people who may never be comfortable with this. There are spouses who have lost their beliefs in particular religions while their spouse has not.
Right.
And there's concerns of, will this break up my marriage?
Devastating, yeah.
You know, is this going to be a child custody issue? And so to everybody who came up to express their gratitude for the work we've done on the shows, you are so absolutely welcome. And the things that you said were overwhelming and very touching. And it was nice to, I mean, because I'd see somebody, I'd just be sitting there, and there'd be somebody who's looking at you and the, you know, there's Matt. I have to go up and thank him. And it was just amazing.
Wow.
And so I wanted to make sure I passed it on to everybody else who's been doing the shows for this long. Your work has not gone unnoticed. It has had an impact on many, many people. And we will continue to do it if they take away our public access studio. If it doesn't matter what they do, we have an important mission, I guess, for lack of a better word. That we're going to continue to do to try to be the voice for the people who need it and the people who can't have a voice of their own.
Well, it's like I do this, you know, in the hope that we'll, you know, do something for someone that will have some effect. And then you go to the atheist convention there and you see that, it worked. So, okay, awesome.
It was kind of fun because my talk was originally going to be titled Changing Minds. Mm-hmm. And it was going to be a little bit of a look at how not only do we need to engage theists and have the discussions and debates about the existence of God and morality and all these other things that change people's minds from theism toward atheism, but we also need to engage in the type of activities and discussions that change the mind of theists who are never going to become atheists with respect to what they think of us, that we're not the baby-killing monsters next door. We are their neighbors and friends and coworkers. And so why it's important to be out and to understand these subjects. Well, my talk was on Sunday, and a couple hours before I gave my talk, J.T. Eberhard gave his, which was called Coming Out Secular. J.T. said everything I was going to say pretty much and said it better than I was probably going to say it, especially after being out all night at the pub crawl.
Right.
So while he's talking and I'm going, man, I'm going to have nothing to say because he said it. So, because I was finalizing my slides based on real conversations I had over the weekend with people. And so I was like, ooh, I can't say that because he just said it. So I'll just delete that and I'll put something. Before long, I had deleted all of it. And I got to do what I wanted to do the whole time, was to get up and talk about how we have a responsibility to build a better atheist community so that the world is a safer place for people to come out, and the people come out have social groups and people that they can interact with,
right,
having lost their families and previous social groups.
Yeah, we need those things in place.
I basically just riffed on that, you know, off the top of my head for about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, something like that, and then I took questions for the rest of the hour, which is what I wanted to do in the first place, mm-hmm. because the Q&A is where I live. And I had a good time. It was nowhere near my best and nowhere near the best of the convention. The stars of the convention, in addition to JT, Greta Christina gave her Why Are Atheists Angry talk, which is just phenomenal.
I read the article.
Mm.
I assume it's basically the same thing.
Yes. And I talked to her afterwards because she says many of the same things that I say, that Jeff says, that we've all said on here, the things that are objectionable, the things that we are, in fact, passionate about. And I can hear, for example, any of you saying the same things that I, you know, expressing passion over the same things I have passion for. And it's just, yep, Amen, brother. Greta has a way of saying the same things in a passionate way that brings tears to my eyes and overwhelms me. Hmm. It's rare that you hear somebody who is saying what you agree with, saying the things that you're passionate about, and still have it seem new and overwhelming. Right. And Greta was phenomenal. Jamila Bey was phenomenal. Just so much fun to listen to. I wish they'd have given her 2 hours. And so from my perspective, the fact that there weren't very many women speaking at this conference, mm-hmm. Which is something we absolutely need to fix, was kind of overcome by the fact that the two of the three women speakers, Liz Cornwell from the Richard Dawkins yeah. Institute, was also there, kind of shared billing. And I missed a part of their talk because something else was going on. But the two women that I heard outpaced pretty much all
the
men.
So anyway. It was quality over yeah. quantity.
Yeah, and of course, PZ and I had a bit of fun because, I mean, he called me out twice during his talk because of the Conservapedia article that basically talked about us, why are atheists so fat? You know, so it's me and PZ. And so we had a little joust. We're supposed to sumo wrestle right. or something, and we had a little a jousting session of measuring our epines, which I will always lose because, you know, the guy's a monster commanding masses through this blog.
Yes.
But I had an absolute blast. It was many great. Times overwhelming, and I was lucky that there were a handful of people there that I'd interacted with on Facebook and through other things, through email. And I just got to hang out and just, like, soak it all in. And it was so while I, you know, was nowhere near my best, I absolutely loved it and had a great time. And I'd highly recommend it. I'm encouraged because Dave Silverman, who is currently the president of American Atheists, he and I don't always agree on everything, but neither do any of us in this room always agree.
Right.
Right.
But I hadn't met Dave. And so any little points of disagreement that we might have had were kind of exacerbated by the fact that we didn't really know each other. Getting a chance to meet him and hear him talk, I am convinced that American Atheists definitely picked the right guy for what they want to do.
Okay.
And I'm encouraged by the direction that they're going, and I'll continue to support them. I hear there's DVDs coming out of the talks, so at least that'll be available for people who want to check it out.
All right.
Great stuff. The Texas Freethought Convention is coming up in October. It's in Houston this year. I'm going to be at the Rapture Ram May 21st, 22nd, and I already mentioned that. See? Now I'm just rambling. What else y'all got?
I'll be at the North Texas RPG Con.
Ooh, yes.
You know, I don't know the exact name of the city or the date, but I think it's May or June. And I will also be at Texicon, which sounds very similar, but is in fact a different convention, also in May or June.
We absolutely need to do more mention of things like that because, as it turns out, you know, while I'm hoping I can't go to the Skepticon thing because I'm also going to be in Tulsa that weekend, but there are cons that go on that I would think would have nothing to do with the skepticism atheism, like Dragon Con, and yet
Dragon Con has a significant skeptical track.
Yeah, there's a significant portion that's, and they do like skeptic atheist speakers at Dragon Con. And I know that, you know, our demographic includes a lot of people who go to those things. So, you know, I don't care if I'm going to the, you know, Foot Fetishes Con of North Idaho, which I'm not.
Well, it was interesting. On Facebook, I did a little experiment where I kind of did a post introducing my atheist Facebook friends to my role-playing game Facebook friends, to my transhumanist Facebook friends.
Uh-huh.
There actually was quite a lot of crossover, way more than I expected.
Yeah. Cool. Especially as the important things, and one of the things that JT mentioned was the under 30 demographic is overwhelmingly secular.
Right.
Cool.
And in 20 years, that's going to be the under 50 demographic.
Right.
This, you know, we talked before about how we have to wait for some people to die off, and there's some people you're not going to convince and everything else. It's one of the things that I'm working on is
happening.
A text that may turn into a book, although I can't commit to that right now. that's going to address the need and the process for making sure we build a better secular community. It'll be interesting to see in 20 years if that portion of the under 30 crowd, now that we're actually tracking these statistics, maintains or grows or shrinks. I mean, because there's always the possibility that people tend to get more religious as they get older.
Right. Don't know why.
So we don't know if this is a change.
They get closer to being dead.
It may be. I've heard from some people who are like, well, you know, I was an atheist until my child was born, and then I was just overwhelmed at the beauty of this and had to accept that there was a God. And I was like,
yeah. No, you got to the point where you needed the support of a community, and there wasn't an atheist one.
Yeah, because while I don't have any kids yet, I can tell you right now that the mere existence of my issue is not going to drive me to conclude that a God is there, because I just understand too well that you cannot discern a cause from the fact that a baby exists and is cute. It's cute because God made it cute. Yeah. No, it's cute because Beth's genes are way better than mine.
They're cute so we won't kill them when they cry.
That's yes. Right. Evolution has tuned us to like them so that we do not throw them into the bin.
it's making noise. Get rid of it.
So did anybody else pay any attention to the royal wedding that took place yesterday?
Was there a royal wedding yesterday?
There was.
I paid no attention to this.
No, I don't care.
I
don't care. I was having a talk with Amanda about this, and she said, oh, that's taken over because everybody's interested in what the rich, wealthy people are doing. And I said, you know, and she brought up, by comparison, you know, some guy who's like the great-great-great-grandson of Da Vinci. I said, you know, I'm probably more interested in the story of a guy who's the great-great-great-grandson of Leonardo Da Vinci and works in a car wash than I am in some pricks that happen to be royal. Aren't we supposed to be against, like,
apparently not
the idea of monarchs in our country?
No, most I know of those our people pe- really most aren't of the people monarchs here all anymore, love lords.
Beth and I have had a lot of discussions on this front, and I'll just say that my take on this is that what the royal family is very different from what they used to be. I mean, even got, you know, Prince William, the Duke of Cambridge now, went out and lived among homeless people. It tells me quite a bit about his character.
Good for him.
And also, my understanding, and I may be wrong, of at least the UK constitutional monarchy, is that the people can remove their titles from them whenever the hell they want as a matter of action. They don't, because this is tradition. It's, you know, these are figureheads that we like to laugh at when they do stupid things, and then we like to have huge extravagant weddings, which actually are a source of revenue for the country.
And Prince Charles apparently is like a farmer and has a big
crazy
what do you mean crazy?
Homeopathy crazy.
Oh
yeah.
Oh, okay, well, all right,
but yeah, so I did. I went through it. Of course, good chunks of it were boring. And, of course, the religious ceremony was religious.
I thought that was one of the kids that was the crazy homeopath.
Well, there's probably more than one of them, but Charles has advocated alternative medicine over and over.
Okay. Yeah.
But most of it was boring. You know,
I was trying to say something nice about the royal bastards over there in England.
I already said something nice about William. Screw the rest of them.
Okay,
go ahead. His week. But, yeah, I really there are other things that I care more about. You mentioned, you know, the great-great-great-grandson of Da Vinci who works in a car wash. Well, while I was at the American Atheist Convention, I got to meet the it's either two greats or three greats, grandson of Charles Darwin, Matthew Chapman.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Who most of us know from the NOVA documentary about the evolution trial in Dover.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew's great. He was there to premiere his new movie, The Ledge, starring Liv Tyler. Where there's an atheist kind of hero in the movie.
Cool.
It's an independent film.
We'll see.
I really overall liked it. I mean, there was...
Oh, you saw the film?
Oh, yes. We watched the whole thing.
I see.
I liked it. He and I went out drinking, and I had some discussions with him about different aspects of it, because there was a specific criticism he got that he just didn't think was deserved. some Christian critic had come in and watched the film and written that the main Christian character was a cartoon caricature of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talked to Matthew afterwards, and I said, you know, I don't agree with him, but I know why he said that. And it's because there are certain aspects of the fundamentalist evangelical set that the best actor in the world cannot reliably mimic. There's something about the timing of certain things, about the mannerisms that you adopt after years and years and years and years of being in these churches that's just really hard to emulate. So I understand where he's coming from with that criticism. Couldn't possibly care less, because what they were talking about was real. The discussions and debates that they had between the theist and the atheist were real. The characters, for the most part, felt right, and the story was engaging. Cool. And is it the next Super Academy Award winner? No. And I don't care about that either, because I liked it. It's rare that you get to see a film like that. Hmm. Plus, you know, we drank quite a bit.
Awesome.
But well, that always helps. Before or after the film?
After. Yeah. And then again the next night for the pub crawl. Yeah, next time I go to conventions, I told Dave, because we did the podcast on Sunday afternoon when I was there. Dave Silverman was sitting right next to me, and I said, you know, next time, not only do you not get to work me on a holiday, but you're going to make sure I speak before the night of drinking. Because, yeah, it was a hard thing to do.
Well.
All right. Any other last minute going? Oh, Beth, you want to do that one?
Why am I doing all the sex stuff?
You have to ask.
It was your story that you liked.
Okay, well, let me pull it up here. So
we already did the guy in Africa.
That's right.
Yes, we did.
Don't tell me
did.
There's more.
No, there is another story.
Oh, man.
So there is a teacher. Let's see, where is she at? And she writes books on the side under a pen name. And apparently parents are just up in arms about this because she teaches at the high school.
Uh-huh.
This is in Snyder County, Pennsylvania.
And they have a problem with her writing books?
They have a problem with her writing books because people have sex in the books. These are romance novels, she calls them. Other people are calling them erotica. They're probably just bodice rippers.
Mm-hmm.
Parents say Judy Baranich has been an English teacher at Midwest High School for nearly 25 years, but recently they found out she is a published author and writes under the pen name Judy Mays. Her books are erotic romance novels, and some parents say they are not happy with the book's content. Parent Wendy Apple has a son in 10th grade at Midwest High School in Middleburg. Now my son knows, so how is he thinking when he's sitting in her class knowing what she does on the side?
What does her son know?
He knows that she writes these
books.
And
how did he find out?
Don't know. Somebody found out and
made a
big deal out of it.
Congratulations. What was her name? Kathy Andrews?
Judy Mays.
Judy Mays. Okay, I'm confusing her with the finest porn novel writer that there was. Those of you who have read.
Oh, no.
There's a punchline.
What punchline?
The old part.
Parent Deanna Stepp said the evidence is clear. She is teaching children that are under the age of 18, and definitely the books she is writing are adult books. I think she needs to make a decision as to what she wants to do, either be a school teacher or author, Stepp said.
God. That's just stupid.
She's teaching them English.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what she does in her off time
is
nobody's fucking business.
Right.
25 years she's been teaching kids English, and some parents find out that in her off time, under a different name, she writes books that they happen to find offensive.
Yeah.
Now she needs to decide whether she's going to be a teacher or an author. Hey, guess what?
Seems to me she decided.
You guys have been
a teacher and an author.
Yeah. You guys have been parents for 18 years, and in your off time, you're a bunch of ignorant fucking bigots. And I think it's time for you to decide whether you're going to be a parent or an ignorant fucking bigot.
Did they compile statistics on the way that the previous students turned out and then blame it all on her?
The 10-time Teacher of the Year winner has been fired today because she looked at porn online at home privately.
Woo!
You know,
right.
Yeah. It's you don't get to make that call. I'm sorry that you're an idiot. I'm sorry that you're so offended by what somebody does when they're not around your kids. And it's, you know, I think she should be not only admired for continuing to teach and doing whatever it took to make ends meet because we don't pay teachers enough, to engaging in the type of things she enjoys, and being at least conscious enough about the possible problems to take on a pseudonym.
Right.
Well, so that there would to avoid this conflict, and somebody else has raised the conflict anyway.
Right.
Yep.
Yep. Because teachers shouldn't have sex at all.
Teachers, they shouldn't even know it exists.
Teachers shouldn't have unions. See, because that they get overpaid, and how dare she? After she's already overpaid as a teacher because of her union, how dare she then in her free time have a side job?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Our taxes are paying.
Yeah.
She should be happy with that.
I'm just bringing that in because I despise people like that.
It's not too different from the parents who wanted Hemet Mehta fired. He's a friendly atheist.
Right.
And he teaches school.
Or the various scumbags who want PC Myers fired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, congratulations. We can't say anything disparaging about how you actually do your job. So we're going to come over here and do a bunch of hand-waving and dangle this red herring in front of people in hopes that it scares them into taking your job away from you.
Well, unfortunately, right. That works sometimes.
Yeah, it really does.
We get those kinds of stories all the time, too. So that's why they keep doing it, because it keeps working.
Yeah. Well, I have a stew to finish. That's in the kitchen.
Stew.
Yes.
Yeah.
Beef stew that I'm making. And we have some kind of event to go to this evening. So.
All right.
I'm talked out.
I'm done.
You come back.
All right.
More
then.
Often.
All right.
See if we can't get some fill-in show.
Sometimes.
Yeah, drop me, to the listeners out there who are interested in the intern thing, you know, drop me an email. Make sure you put NPR in the subject line so that it doesn't get deleted. And on that note, and remember that it's probably going to be a few weeks till we're back live. But no, the show's not ending. Every time it's a week or two or maybe even three off, somebody's like, oh, just admit it. It's the end of the nonprofits. No, sorry. This is what happens when you're trying to coordinate the schedules of three or four people who are trying to volunteer their time.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's gaps.
We don't get paid.
Yeah.
We don't get paid. Though, I want to take a moment to praise Martin Wagner for his brilliant idea of using what site was that? No, don't praise him for that. Okay, we're done.
Well, but the clock is still ticking on our special offer. If being the prime mover isn't enough, what about omniscience? That's right. We'll also make you all knowing, absolutely free. You'll know exactly what I, Dennis Lube, along with Matt Dillahunty.
Mm-hmm.
Russell Glasser and Beth Presswood will say on our next show. When is it? The 28th? The 28th? Right. And you'll know that the music we'll leave you with today will be The Logical Song by Supertramp. So don't delay in taking advantage of this incredible offer. Act now.
Operators are standing by.